Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings for this 21st of December, just 4 days before Christmas. We're heading into the weekend, and when we wake up on Monday morning, it will be Christmas Eve day, and we're getting closer and closer each day, of course, to celebrating the birth of our King, who has inaugurated the kingdom that knows no end. It is the kingdom of which we are a part. It is the kingdom to which we attend each day as we fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, here on Faith Radio Mornings, talking about the news and the topics of the day from a distinctly Christian perspective. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner. Enjoy being in studio with Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault and so many of the guests that do come on the program each morning to talk about these news headlines, again, keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus. And one of those guests in particular is a voice that you know. It's a name that you know from our midday show programming here on the Faith Radio Network, and it's that of Carmen LeBurge of Connecting Faith. Thought we'd bring her in a little early because I need Carmen to help me resolve a bit of controversy we've experienced in studio this week. Good morning, Carmen.
Good morning, Peter.
So on Wednesday, Carmen, we were talking movies. I don't know how we got to this topic, but I confessed, after not having seen Miracle on 34th or 42nd or 62nd Street or whatever that Christmas movie is, that was met with a little bit of surprise, but it was when I said that I've never seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life, that I literally, Carmen, in studio, I watched Rachel and Paul at the exact same time have the exact same reaction, mouths wide open, and I have been blacklisted around Faith Radio Morning since that moment. Can you help me at all, Carmen? What's happening here?
This is the advantage that I have by working remotely. So the Miracle on 34th Street, let's just like sort of get a little pause there for a moment. The Miracle took place in a little town called Bethlehem on a street whose name we don't know. And the Wonderful Life that we have is a wonderful life based on the event of the coming of Jesus Christ, the actual inbreaking of the King and the inauguration of his kingdom here in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. The movie bears accurate testimony and witness to the choices that we make in this life, and how as those choices work themselves out over time, people are affected by our sin and our sinfulness and our brokenness. However, If you're going to evaluate the movie It's a Wonderful Life from a Christian worldview, if you actually sit down with that in mind, you're going to be horrified because the angels are presented as extraordinarily different than Scripture presents angels. God is presented as extraordinarily different than the way God is actually presenting himself in the Scriptures of the Old and New Testaments. And what is revered at the very end of the movie is, in fact, not the Bible. There is a book at the very end of the movie that is the sort of centerpiece message, but it is not the Bible. And I'll just leave it there, and you can, you and I probably can't debate it from there because you haven't seen the movie, but for people who are listening who have seen the movie, when they watch it again this year, which most people will do, it's the number one Christmas movie in America. Just think about that for a moment, Peter. It has nothing to do with Christ. It has nothing to do with the redemptive narrative of the arc of all of human history. It has to do with a personal narrative that is quite compelling and quite American, but not expressly Christian, if we're going to use that term in the biblical sense.
Carmen, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that breakdown and analysis of the movie. I feel like I at least have the ground underneath my feet now to maybe sort of rescind the excommunication I've experienced in studio by these two.
And now Paul and Rachel hate me, so there you go. I have transferred, and I don't care that people don't like me nearly as much as you do. So yeah. I think we're going to be good. This seems like progress for a morning show.
Well, thank you for helping me bear my burdens this morning, Carmen. It's evidence of your Christian faith yet again. Love having you on the program here on Friday mornings as you do. Let's take a short break. I know there's some pretty spinny news headlines out of Washington, D.C. with quite a bit of turnover within Trump's inner circle, and then a really interesting and sweet story about a pen pal named George H.W. Bush. We'll be right back.
back to Faith Radio Mornings here at about 10 minutes past the hour on the 21st of December, just a few days away from celebrating Christmas and the birth of our King. And Carmen, Rachel, and I were just talking during the break about that your breakdown of It's a Wonderful Life was incredibly helpful, but it doesn't take away from the simple fact that I haven't ever seen the movie, and so there's still some problems in studio here.
Well, you know, you're going to have some time off over the holidays, and you can put that on your list of research.
It is definitely on my bucket list for the next 15 days. And, Carmen, I know there's been some news out of Washington here this week recently, and you and I chat about the news and some ways to think about it from a Christian standpoint. And I'm not sure what to do with some of what seems to be some pretty significant turmoil coming out of President Trump's inner circle. When you see pretty well-respected leaders like John Kelly and General Mattis step aside here in the last couple of weeks, it's hard to know who is remaining within the inner circle that seems to be a person of stability and trust.
So this morning, it appears that it's possible we're headed to a government shutdown. And I think that the resignation, maybe that's the right word, maybe that's the wrong word, of General Mattis from his position, it just comes as one in a fairly long litany of folks who will not be returning to Washington after the first of the year. And I would say that, you know, for those of us across the country, those key cabinet positions are important. I think Nikki Haley no longer being at the UN matters to us globally in ways that we do not yet recognize. I think that the fact that we currently have no attorney general, I think just the list is pretty long at those cabinet level positions. I'm probably equally as concerned, Peter, for the more than three dozen House Republicans who, you know, they didn't even run again. I mean, part of the reason we're going to have such a vastly new Congress in the new term is that, you know, we had three dozen Republican members of Congress who didn't even bother to run again. And so the loss of those who know how things work, and regardless of whether or not you think, you know, Congress actually like works, makes progress, there is an institutional knowledge that's necessary in how things work, how things get done, that is now really being lost. And so I think that for the president, who is not a career politician, and many people, that's really like one of the reasons people were extremely hopeful related to this president, right? He's a business guy. He's going to come in. He's going to be able to run the country like a business. The problem is the country is not a business. And so you can't run the country like a business is run. You can't run the country like a household is run. He's not our dad either. We don't submit to his authority in the way that children submit to their parents. I think that's very frustrating for him. I think that, you know, he would like to be regarded as the nation's CEO, but we're not a business and we don't have a CEO. We have a president, and that president has to work cooperatively and in really significant ways with both houses of Congress in order to get anything accomplished, anything of substance, anything of lasting or enduring value. He can make all the executive orders that he wants, but those can be, as we have already seen, immediately undone by a new administration.
Well, and it's tricky.
And so,
I was just going to say, Carmen, too, you know, and you referenced that he has to work with both halls of Congress like that. And of course, when you and I come back after the new year, we're going to see some new power and control in the House of Representatives. It's just going to get more difficult to try to do anything if you're not willing to go that direction.
And so I think that the challenge, you're exactly right, Peter, and I think that the challenge for Christians is that many of us have been trained to very much dislike the idea of compromise. And so I think that as Christians, one of the things we have to recognize is that, you know, we have a pluralistic nation when it comes to the things of faith and people of faith and the varieties of faith that people practice, and that we're not a theocracy. This is not a nation run by God, and it's not a government that, you know, in which everyone is actually looking to God for wisdom and answers. Now, I'm praying for that, like, right? I would love for us to be a nation guided and directed by God at every step. I recognize he's ultimately sovereign over the whole thing, but God's not moving the chess pieces around, like, right? These are real free people making real free decisions elected by a genuinely free people. And so I think that as Christians, We need to be praying for those in leadership. We need to be bringing our Christian convictions to bear when there are things that are happening that are contrary to our Christian convictions. We need to actually call our members of Congress and say, that's not, I'm your constituent, and that's not the way I think about that. I'm being informed by, you know, scripture as I'm bringing this information to you. And you need to know that as a person with a vote, you should care about what I think. So that's sort of the power of the persuasion that Christians in the country have today in regards to these things. We should not just be sitting on the sidelines and watching all of this unfold as if we have no part to play in it. We do have a part to play.
Well, and I appreciate just the way you're making some distinctions about the Christian faith versus the government of the United States. And sometimes those two things can work hand in hand. But, Carmen, as we're in a season right now where we're just getting ready to celebrate the birth of our King, and we talk about it all the time on Faith Radio Mornings, that we're part of a kingdom that knows no end. But some of what I hear you say is that the temporary kingdom of Washington, D.C., in which God does have a role in some of these ways, there's still an eternal kingdom that can be brought to bear on these situations that's different maybe than the politics of our day.
Well, that's right. The decisions that are made today in Washington matter. It's not that they're irrelevant. They are relevant. They do matter. But they're temporary. That Voyager conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago, right? It's got like a 30,000-year plan for what it's doing.
Yeah.
We don't have a 30,000-year plan for anything. We've got like a 13-minute plan. or a one-season plan, or a maybe I'll get to January plan. Many people in our country do not take the long view of very much. And so I think that, you know, getting back to your sort of original question, which I wasn't really avoiding it, but, you know, General Mattis's retirement, I do think that we do have to recognize that at some point the president needs people around him, not only who can tell him the truth about what's really happening in the world, but who can help him make decisions that benefit our country. I don't know what constellation of people that is going to be, but clearly General Mattis felt like he was no longer in a position to influence the president in ways that he regarded as positive. And so, you know, I have to respect his evaluation of his own situation. He obviously knows a whole lot more about himself and about the prospects for his ability to influence the president and serve the president well, which is actually how he articulated his resignation letter. He does not feel like he could serve the president in ways that, you know, frankly, as a member of the military, he knows he has to serve his commander in chief. And so part of this is unique to General Mattis because he is a career military person. And that may be a little bit, that may be one caveat of this particular resignation that I think is significant.
Yeah, yet another thing to watch as we head into the new year for sure with the news coming out of Washington, D.C. That is the voice of Carmen LaBerge. You know her from Connecting Faith, taking the headlines of the day and connecting them to life. And Carmen, when we come back from break, love to change the topic to a really interesting and sweet story about how George H.W. Bush became a pen pal of a young boy overseas. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 21st of December. We are chatting first up with Carmen LaBerge of Connecting Faith. And Carmen, pretty sweet story here about how a former president who just passed away and George H.W. Bush became pen pals with a young Filipino boy named Timothy. And as it goes, he says, Dear Timothy, I want to be your new pen pal. I am an old man, 77 years old, but I love kids. I live in Texas. I will write to you from time to time. What was prompted behind this story? Do you know some more details about this?
So, as the stories come out, right, after a person passes away and folks are telling the stories that they know about that individual that may only be known, to those folks. So Compassion International is the ministry here that would be at the centerpiece of this. And the way that this works for those folks out there who have a Compassion International child, you don't actually send them correspondence directly. You send it through the ministry of Compassion International. And so, you know, there had to be this go-between. So the president, or the former president, is actually using the Compassion International stationery that, you know, that the ministry provides, and he is writing these letters to Timothy. And I want you to think about that just for a moment. I'm sort of one of those folks that's like, first of all, I hope that in addition to this first letter, Compassion actually kept all the letters, and maybe they'll be compiled as letters to Timothy. Like, how cool would that be?
That would be
right?
very cool, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's certainly reminiscent of, Paul's instruction to his disciple Timothy in scripture. That would be, you know, certainly one way for, Christians to be thinking about this in terms of letter writing and the importance of letter writing in discipleship. But this is such a sweet story because this is literally, you know, the president. We think of them as sort of these larger-than-life characters. We don't necessarily think of them as people who, like, go to concerts and then respond to a giving appeal, which is what happened here. He went to a concert in Washington. It was a concert in partnership with Compassion International. And so at the, you know, at the break, you know, they basically share the ministry and they say, does anybody want to sponsor a child? And the president raised his hand. And so Timothy is, you know, sort of the kid that he got by the, you know, by the compassion process. Ordinarily you kind of go out during intermission and they've got their, you know, the pictures of kids who need sponsorship. I don't know if that's how this happened in this case or if, you know, he was, you know, kind of got Timothy by the Compassion International lottery. I don't really necessarily know how this child, was assigned to him, but, he started writing to him more than 10 years ago now. And sent his $38 a month, right, to sponsor this child. And he would sign his letters George Walker so that he was, you know, really not identifiable to the recipient. And you can just imagine now Timothy, who was 7 at the time, so would now be more than 17, is now finding out, right, that his pen pal and his sponsor, his Compassion International sponsor over all these years, the person who, you know, paid for his lunches at school and his education and his school uniforms and those kinds of things and his health care, all of which Compassion International does for this $38 a month, he's now finding out, you know, that was George H.W. Bush. Mm. It's an incredible story.
You know, it is. It gives me chills, actually, Carmen, a bit. And I think in a year, and I know you've covered a lot of the news and the headlines and specifically coming out of the churches so often, where maybe the public persona that we've experienced among some of our leaders is different than what was going on behind the scenes in private. And it's troubling and it's difficult. So to have a story of a situation where a man is so roundly embraced as being a person of integrity and character, to see something in the quiet of his home that nobody knew that he was actually doing and there was a consistency of character, it's one of those moments that helps rebuild our sense of trust and faith.
Right. So there's two parts of the story that I really want people to know. One of those is what you have just alluded to, that even the people closest to the president, the story records this from Jim McGrath, whose name people may recognize. He was President Bush's spokesman for 25 years. So, you know, this is a person who literally knows everything about the former president. Jim McGrath only learned of the president's sponsorship of Timothy when the report surfaced in the media this past week. McGrath said, I had no idea ever that 41 did this, but I'm not the least bit surprised. He's the kindest, most giving man I've ever known. And so this really a right hand not revealing to the left hand what it's doing. This is really the kind of giving that Scripture talks about, and I think that's important here. This was not something that the former President Bush felt like he needed to be publicly celebrated for, or that even those people closest to him even needed to know. He just quietly did this over the course of his life. So Timothy is now 25 years old. And so he has actually known, since he graduated from the program at 17, he has actually known who his sponsor was. And his response to that, this is now 8 years ago, his response to that is, the most powerful guy in the world knows my name. And I think that for us, the message there is the reminder that the most powerful being in the entire universe, God himself, knows our name, calls us by name, has this deep affection for us, corresponds with us, pray. I mean, Jesus is, as God, interceding for us. I mean, just this, the ability to use this story in our conversations with other people today, I think is extraordinary. And I think listeners might like to know that Timothy is now 25 years old. He is leading a church in the Philippines as the he plays the guitar and he's the worship leader. I think That's a very tender testimony to the very quiet faith of our former president.
Yeah, Carmen, I hear so often, you know, you should do big things for God and you know, do something that is of substance and magnitude. But when you talk about the rippling effects of the choices that maybe nobody knows about that you're doing behind the scenes in the quiet of your home, Timothy is a rippling effect of the decisions of President Bush that nobody knew about.
Right. I mean, there's no way to know what any decision that you and I make on any given day, you know, what that is ultimately, to what that is ultimately going to lead. That sort of circles back around to our conversation about It's a Wonderful Life. That's really sort of what the movie is about. If you make a different set of choices, if you open a different set of doors, if you treat people in a different series of ways, there are very different outcomes. And those outcomes are significant not only for you, but those outcomes are significant for others as well, not just in your own family, but in that case, for an entire town of Bedford. And in this case, you know, the president had done during his lifetime here in the United States, you know, really all that he could do. But that didn't mean that he felt like God was done using him. And so he was using a portion of the resources that God had placed in his hands to do something for someone halfway around the world that needed doing. And it seems, it may seem small. $38 a month is actually within the capacity of most people to invest in the life and welfare of another person. And so we may say to ourselves, well, President Bush had a lot of money. He should have done a whole lot more than this. Well, he did a whole lot more than this. If you actually look at the things that he and Barbara invested themselves in globally over the course of their lives, and certainly the legacy of their faith and faithfulness lives on through generations of the Bush family. But I think that you and I each need to take and claim responsibility, Peter, for what we can do, what is within our capacity to do. And so maybe it is within your capacity to make this kind of level of commitment to someone else halfway around the world, for us to live slightly more simply, like, right, $38 a month less doing whatever it is I spend $38 a month doing, in order that someone else might simply live.
Yeah, it's a beautiful invitation, Carmen, and I really appreciate, actually, that you brought it back around to It's a Wonderful Life. I'll make it a commitment over the holiday season, Carmen. I will watch It's a Wonderful Life, and I will live tweet you my theological response.
I love it.
Hey, have a great,
I love it, man.
Have a great Christmas, Carmen. Look forward to catching up again after the new year.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Well, head over to Lighten Up and some bottom of the hour news. When we come back for the second half of this hour, our friend Dr. Gary Stratton will join us, and we'll be talking a little bit about the different responses to the news of the king that we saw in Zechariah and Mary in the Gospel of Luke. Well, in light of the Star of Bethlehem, we certainly had a pretty significant astronomical event here happen in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis-St. Paul, where this past week a refrigerator-sized fireball was spotted over Cambridge, north of the Twin Cities metro area. One of the biggest meteors seen worldwide this year, seen early yesterday, and it actually rattled homes with a sonic boom. Scientists say it's the second meteor worldwide in 2018 to get close enough to Earth to drop fragments, actually. So quite an event. I do recommend going to YouTube and check out the blue fireball that raced across the sky. Yesterday during the 7 o'clock hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined in studio by Associate Professor of Philosophy, Dr. Brad Sickler, and we are talking a bit about anxiety and depression and what can be helpful and why.
Well, of course, I wouldn't make any specific recommendations.
You're not a doctor, right?
I'm just a philosopher. however, as I understand it, the research indicates that talk therapy is just as effective as medication. And that's not to say don't take medication, because obviously that helps a lot of people. The point rather is that because we are complicated spiritual, physical beings, and there is this interplay, that's why talk therapy and pharmaceuticals can both be helpful, because we have these dual aspects to our being. So you can help things from the physical level only. You can help things at the more spiritual, mental level. But the whole person can benefit from that, because that's what we are, is a unity of these things.
Dr. Sickler has been doing quite a bit of research on the connection between the spirit and the mind, our physiology and our spirituality, and it's quite interesting information. He was quite in-depth with things yesterday. If you want to catch that entire segment, you can go to myfaithradio.com, search for Brad Sickler for anxiety, depression. Anything along those lines will take you to the interview that we did yesterday. Well, we've already been chatting off-air with Dr. Gary Stratton, who is a professor at Johnson University, and he joins us on Fridays on Faith Radio Mornings to talk about different dimensions of our spiritual life. And Gary and I are going to talk about some of the different responses that Zechariah and Mary had to the news of the birth of the king.
Strong means strong, and weak means weak. So how can weakness become strength? This is Jim Garlow. In 2 Corinthians 12:9, the Lord tells Paul, "My grace is made sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." And Paul responds, "Therefore I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me." Imagine actually delighting, as Paul did, in weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and difficulties. It's counterintuitive, isn't it? In our culture, to quote Vince Lombardi, winning isn't the most important thing, it's the only thing. Strength is valued. Weakness is almost unthinkable. But the reverse becomes understandable in light of God's covenant. He made a covenant with Abraham that exchanged Abraham's weakness with God's strength. And that covenant applies to us as well today. This is Jim Garlow.
It's about 20 minutes before the top of the hour here on the 21st of December for Faith Radio Mornings, and we're going to be joined live now by Dr. Gary Stratton, who is University Professor of Spiritual Formation and Cultural Leadership at Johnson University. And Gary, Rachel and I in studio have the moment every week as we anticipate your walk-up music. We sort of forget that it's there, and then we get ready to play it, and we both just respond with such favorability. I think it's the favorite walk-up music for Faith Radio Mornings.
Well, it's because it's a little unusual.
It is a little unusual. So to remind our listeners one more time, those people that might be listening for the first time and haven't heard your voice, why did you choose this music?
Well, when that song was first out by Walk the Moon, God was just doing something in my own spiritual formation journey. I mean, I needed to shut up the voice of my anxiety and join the dance of the Trinity, his dance of love and delight. And when I heard that song, I just thought, that's it. That's my life. I need to shut up the voice of anxiety and dance with God.
Oh, I love it. And Gary, you're spending time with students all week long, and I know that you get a little bit of a pulse on where we are as a culture just when we see it manifested in the classroom. And things do shift year after year. And as we wrap up, this is the last time you and I will chat in 2018. And before getting into some of the topics about Mary and Zachariah, I'd be curious, as you are working in this field of spiritual formation and thinking about the needs that we have as we follow Jesus, what are you seeing primarily among our young people in this past year in terms of sort of the most significant need that's there?
That is a great question. It's interesting. It does tie into what we just talked about, anxiety. Generation Z, which are the ones that are primarily in college at this point, they're the most anxiety-prone generation since we started studying these things. They're just full of fear. And ironically, it's arguably at the safest time, and at least in terms of crime rate, in American history for a century. So I think some of it's just the uncertainty. Some of all the foundations have come loose. Some of everything, it seems, up for grabs. There's no rules or roles or morality or commonly held stories other than the stories of Hollywood. And it just creates just a surface-level anxiety and uncertainty about life.
Well, and Gary, I love that message, and especially in light of the fact that we're celebrating, of course, the birth of our King, Jesus. And it just calls to mind that passage in John 16 in which Jesus is talking with his disciples and telling them there's going to be quite a bit of turmoil in their lives. And he says that to them at the final verse of this chapter, he says, "I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome this world." And that is one of the primary invitations of this season. If we're going to deal with the anxiety of the age, I don't know of any other place to go than to point our eyes towards Jesus.
No, I agree. And then in the end, that's what the story of Scripture and the story of Christmas is about, that he's Emmanuel, that he's God with us. And that's the very first thing that is revealed about him in the book of Matthew in the very end when Jesus in the Great Commission, the bottom line, "Lo, I will be with you always to the end of the age," that he's with us at every moment in everything.
Yeah, it is a central promise certainly to cling to in our lives. We're talking with Dr. Gary Stratton, as we do every Friday morning. And Gary, as you and I were texting last night and thinking through and chatting through topics of today, you made a really interesting observation that as we're talking about the birth of Jesus just now, that some of these characters in Scripture about whom we read, specifically Mary and Zachariah, had some very different responses when they heard this news. Kind of remind our listeners what happened here in these stories.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Zachariah is this 60, 70-something priest. He and his wife are barren, which is just a bad deal in their thing of shame in their culture. And he gets picked by Lot to stand before the Lord on a holy day. And lo and behold, the angel Gabriel shows up and tells him, your prayer's been answered. I'm going to give you a son, and it's going to be this amazing son. You're going to give him the name John, and he's going to prepare the way for the Lord. And Zechariah's response is, how can I be sure of this? I am an old man, and my wife is well along in years. And that's very deliberately contrasted with Mary's response, who gets equally, if not even more remarkable news. She's never known a man, and yet she's going to bear the Son of God. And when the angel tells her that, she says, how will this be, since I am a virgin? And Mary gets met with a positive response from the angel. And the angel basically rebukes Zechariah for not believing what God's told him and says, yeah, just, you know, so you get some more time to think about this. You're going to be mute until he's born, so you can have a season of silence to think about it. That used to seem so unfair to me. They look like such subtle differences in their responses.
And in those responses, Gary, and the subtleties of them that maybe sometimes we might miss in the English language of the text, what is there some sort of heart difference behind these responses? Because they both seem to be questioning God, and yet, to your point, the fundamental, what's behind the question, is really different between the two of them.
Well, it is, and I remember puzzling around this for so long and thinking, well, the issue is that Zechariah was old and a priest, and he should have known better, and Mary was young and had no training, and so God kind of gave her a pass. But if you look at it real subtly about what they're asking, it's not really that simple, that Zechariah is asking for certainty. How can I be sure of this? He doesn't want to have faith. He wants certainty. Whereas Mary is responding in faith, how will this be since I'm a virgin? But it's, I believe you, but I don't have any idea how on earth this is going to come about. And it's a very subtle difference between an honest doubt, but that's full of faith. I do believe, help thou my unbelief. And something that's not really faith, that's demanding something more than faith. I want certainty. And that's the exact opposite of what faith is.
Do we see some of this theme play itself out, Gary, in the Old Testament story around King Nebuchadnezzar and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they're getting chucked into the fiery furnace? And they make this profound statement that says, our God can save us, but even if he doesn't, we will not bow down and worship your God. Is this similar to the heart of Mary we see in their response?
I think it is. And, of course, it's these young people that are putting us all to shame with these great responses of faith. Mary is at oldest 15, she could be as young as 12 or 13. You know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, same age, very young teenagers, maybe late teens, but, you know, not even in their 20s yet, making these responses of faith. But it's this place of, I trust you no matter what happens, but I do need some instruction. I require further instruction.
Well, I think it's an incredible point. I'd love to mine into that further with you, Gary. We'll take a short break here. But you did, just so you know, you got a fist pump from Rachel Sutton in studio here, who's a recent graduate of school, talking about it's the young people who are leading us. You and I think, are a combined age of 227. So there is hope in the future, Gary, relative to following Jesus in this world. And I would love to get more in depth in this topic about what it means to follow in the midst of both doubt and faith next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at about 10 minutes before the top of the hour, just 4 days before Christmas on the 21st of December. And we're chatting with Dr. Gary Stratton, as we do every Friday morning on Faith Radio, just thinking about some of the different dimensions of our faith from a spiritual formation view of things. And Gary, we've been talking a little bit about the responses that Zechariah had, where there was this demand or a desire for a sign to prove that the prophecy might be true. And that's compared and contrasted to Mary's response that does not doubt, really does believe, but is wondering how in the world can this be given the circumstances? And be curious, Gary, if Zechariah does obviously have to go through a season of, I think, what we could rightly call some discipline from God. And it really does call to mind Hebrews 12, in which God does discipline those that he loves. And sometimes when we're experiencing that discipline, it isn't fun, but it's always for our good and always for our wholeness. It's not to prove something about an offended God, like sometimes I will discipline my kids from that basis. God is really still having Zechariah in mind here.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we tend to think of discipline as a penal thing, where you know, the more common way that Paul talks about discipline, and it, we think that the writer of Hebrews was influenced by Paul, is it's much more of an athletic approach to discipline. It's more like the discipline that a coach puts on you. It's not so much necessarily that you did something wrong, but I'm putting you through something to get you ready for the game. I see a weakness in your game. I'm putting you through this time of practice so that you're ready to handle that blitz when it comes. And I think that's really what's going on here. Like, Zechariah, you have got so obsessed about this prayer. I mean, the first thing the angel says is, your prayer has been answered. So obviously he's been praying it again, even though he's got the faith of Abraham and the pathway. Abraham was really old when he had a kid. Maybe it's not too late for me, so it was a beautiful thing that he's praying for. And yet he's kind of held on to that and taken possession of it. Like, my identity is wrapped up in the answer rather than in you, Lord. And I think that's what God's getting at here. I'm going to have you be quiet and think about this for a while, because it's not about you're telling me what to do. It's about you're listening to my voice.
Well, and what I hear in this invitation too, Gary, is not that we just do away with all doubt, but that we allow doubt to take us into a direction that transforms us more deeply into faith.
I agree. I love something Tennyson said. He said that there is more faith in honest doubt, believe me, than in half the creeds. And sometimes we do just parrot certain words and beliefs because we think that's what Christians are supposed to believe. And it's okay to wonder about things and to ask questions. We always, you know, the famous example of Doubting Thomas, the poor guy got this name because he missed the resurrection of Jesus. I mean, I live with this fear that somewhere someone is having some fun and I'm not in on it and I'm going to miss it. And he's missed the greatest event in history. But and he's heard, like, they've seen him die. This horrible thing has happened. And he said, you know, unless I see the nail marks in his hands, put my finger where the nails were, put my hand in his side, I can't believe. And it's just this honest statement. But he doesn't leave. He doesn't check out. He stays there with him, seeing if maybe Jesus will come back again. Of course, when he does, he doesn't rebuke Thomas, like, you know, you unbeliever. Instead, he's like, here, come here, look at my hands. Put your hands on my side. You stop doubting and believe. And Thomas gets this, the first time that we know of in recorded history, that someone understood the true connection between Yahweh of the Old Testament and the God of the Greek world, where he says, my Kyrios and my Theos, my Lord and my God. And that deep faith that he had, that you could argue is greater than that of the other disciples now, came because he was willing to be honest about his doubt.
I think that's an incredible invitation, Gary, because I think sometimes I'll follow the path of victory through denial. I'll try to make up the fact that I don't doubt, and if I can just say something with great strength and maybe say something louder, claim some of the promises of God. But that doesn't necessarily resolve the doubt. It is so often these deep places, and sometimes in silence and solitude and a bit of exile, in which our heart is actually transformed and we develop true trust and not sort of a claimed trust.
No, and I think there's something in the nature of religion, and I'm not talking about Christianity per se, though Christianity can become very religious if we're not careful, that's about getting certainty out of God. People worship idols because they want to get things out of them, and I want to have guarantees. And it's the exact opposite of the way that God invites us into this place of this relationship, as you put my trust in me, and sometimes it's hidden and sometimes it's silent, but we develop a definite relationship, not just about the things I give you, but about heart to heart, mind to mind.
Related to that too, Gary, and in terms of thinking about this with our kids, I made a note here in the first segment when you were talking about how the young people are sort of leading us in this story, Mary being such a young person, and we're talking about doubt and faith. Are there implications for us as parents when we think about how we are introducing our kids to the faith? I know that it's pretty common and understandable to say we're going to teach you maybe 8-10 verses of scripture, something along these lines. But in terms of preparing for a life journey, these kinds of concepts are not too big for kids to be able to talk about faith and doubt and following Jesus in the unknown. Some of these ideas, we can introduce these things at a very early age, can't we?
No, I think we can, and I think there's this subtle balance between introducing our children to Christianity as an inherited value and belief system, like any other value and belief system that any other parents around the world, whether they're Muslim, Buddhist, or pagan, and this introducing to Christianity as a lived experiential reality. And both of them are important. They need to have a Christian worldview. They need to understand the scriptures. I'm not minimizing that. But we also need to lead them on to where they're actually encountering God. They're seeing him work objectively, praying for something and seeing God answer. doing some very, maybe very short, but some devotional time where they sense God's presence and peace with them, I think they can get that at a very early age and begin to see Christianity as both and, that it's both this beautiful worldview that we buy into, but it's also this incredible relationship with the God who lives with us at every moment and wants to be intimately involved in every detail of our lives.
Talking with Gary Stratton this morning, and Gary, we have just about a minute left here, but boy, you really touched on something important, is that in the midst of the doubt that might come in our knowledge, if we have the certainty of that relationship, those two things can really work together, can't they?
I agree. Matter of fact, in the end, intellectual doubt only ruins us if we don't have a personal experiential encounter with Christ. If we have that, then we can deal with a lot. My wife and I love each other deeply, and if she did something I really didn't understand, I would stay in the relationship trying to figure it out because we have this experience of love with one another. Whereas with a stranger, I would just say, you're a nut. I'm out of here. And we need to be careful we're not raising our kids to treat God as a distant stranger, instead as a personal and close and intimate friend.
Well, Gary, certainly when we come back after the new year, I would love to talk about that exact topic. But thanks so much for joining us this past year on Faith Radio Mornings, and Merry Christmas to you and Sue and your whole family.
Merry Christmas to you and to the whole crew there. God bless you.
We'll take a break here and wrap up the first hour of our show and preview what's coming up on hour two for Faith Radio Mornings. I always love Gary's wisdom and perspective on matters of faith like that. And a good first hour with him and Carmen LeBurge, and equally good second hour that we're anticipating, as we'll be joined first by Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com. And this is one of those weeks in which there's a lot of movies out. So we'll talk about Mary Poppins Returns, as well as the new Aquaman movie, and get Adam's thoughts as well on It's a Wonderful Life.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.